That's the spirit.
Hello, Peter Lynham.
Hello, how are you going?
Good.
Not too bad, not too bad. Just got that gnarly news, so
yes.
It is what it is.
A week more just to put our feet up and stay in our bubbles.
Think about how sweet we've got it.
Now, yeah. Peter, what on earth has got you looking into the religion in Nigeria?
I just wanted to think of something totally different from anything with any COVID connections whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Kapai.
And it seemed to me like religion in Africa in general is so interesting and so very different from what we experience that it triggered a series of memories from when I was a student in Britain doing my PhD of connecting with Nigerians and their very different way in which their family and community life existed. Mm. So I began digging around, and then I've also got a friend who's very alarmed by the stories and very caught up in the stories of people from boarding schools, kids, mostly girls, who've been captured by Islamic rebels in the north of the country. And I began thinking about that story and wondering what lay in the background of this resurgence of obviously very militant Islam in the north of the country.
It's from the article you sent through, it looks like it's a 50-50 split between Muslims and Christians.
And cutting right through the middle of Nigeria. And this goes right back to, if you go back before the 11th century, Nigerians would have been, like most Africans, following traditional religions in which there would have been sacred spaces and sacred places and rituals, but not very formalized traditions. And then from the 11th century, Islamic traders began spreading Islam right across West Africa and had a huge impact, making these long journeys across the desert lands. This is where, of course, the talk of Timbuktu comes from. So that's the beginning of a very strong Islamic presence in the north. But then in the 18th century and in the early 19th century, you get British Protestantism and colonialism moving together through the south of the country, starting from the eastern side and moving inland. And so the country ends up with a huge divide running right across the middle, with roughly 50% on each side of either strongly Christian or strongly Islamic. But both sides are trying to win the heart of Nigeria.
How does it affect the central government if there's such a strong divide between the two groups within the country?
It means that the country is effectively a federal state, and that the central running of Nigeria, a huge amount is deputed in terms of laws to the local states. And in fact, almost all the northern states now run under Sharia law. So that means that the central government is relatively weak in the control of the north. Effectively, it's up to each northern state to bring law and order. Now, there's been attempts by the central government to strengthen their influence. But from my reading, which is pretty light, it does appear like they're not doing very well at this.
Mm. Is it, if you live in a place like this, do you kind of have to pick a side to sort of get on with things and actually just sort of live a decent life? Cruise around being agnostic there? And I wouldn't really fit in, would I?
There's 1% of people who do not have a declared religion in Nigeria.
It's crazy. You got to pick a side, eh? You really got to pick a side.
And that's exactly what happens, is that there's a hyping up of the significance of religion. And because this is such an area of division, all patronage networks have a religious aspect to them.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you've got no
it's
choice.
It's woven right in.
It's a day-to-day life sort of thing.
That's right. And so education and advancement and work and all of these things will be interconnected. And so when you take those boarding schools where the girls have been captured from. These would be Christian schools and Christians trying to advance their presence in the north, and at considerable risk, and with probably relatively unwillingness by the northern governments to do a great deal to protect these institutions. The other thing that's quite striking, though, is that both Islam and Christianity have gone through a real sense of becoming very much Nigerian phenomena, with a kind of different flavour than you might find in other places. So I mean by this that there's a, I know particularly the Christian side, there's a fascinating BBC little news piece about going to a church that houses, that can take a million people in the building, and that they're currently, it's 1 kilometre long and 1/2 kilometre wide. It's enormous, enormous. It's just an open shed.
Like really. An airplane hangar kind of thing.
That's right. A huge open shed. And they're currently building a new one to take 3 million people.
Whoa.
So the phenomenon of...
Where are they building these? In Nigeria?
In Nigeria, yes.
Far out.
Okay. Mega churches are... truly astounding in Nigeria. Remember,
are these Christian or
well,
which ones?
Particular ones were Christian.
Okay. So assuming there's Muslim, just as big kind of thing. Well,
there are equivalents in Muslim areas as well.
So is it are Catholics the dominant Christians?
No, not at all. Remember, it's a British background, so Catholics are latecomers. So they have made quite significant cut into the Protestant ascendancy. So they're about 10% of the population.
I'm really struggling for a building that fit 3 million people in it. Think about a stadium that does 40 to 80,000. That's huge.
Just look up
that's crazy,
Nigerian mega church.
Don't mind if
and
I do.
You will see this BBC broadcast where they drive around it. They have to drive around it because it's so enormous. The other thing is that, you know, the economy of Nigeria, religion plays a pretty big role because, as you can imagine, there's strong emphasis on money and tithing, etc., etc. And so it's thought that quite probably that at least 10% of the economy is actually flows into religious bodies. And mega church pastors in particular have huge incomes, most of it undeclared and sometimes rather corruptly spread. I think there's an interrelationship in Nigeria between religion and prosperity. So those who are devoted to their religion are likely and expect that they can claim from God that they'll do super well in life.
So there's not an over sort of seeing religious body. There's not a Christian church that would oversee it.
Big boss.
No, there isn't. The Anglican Church is the largest church in Nigeria. Remember, I had no idea that the population of Nigeria was about 180 million, maybe.
211 by the article I have in front of me.
All right, okay, yes. Okay, that's
so
rather...
it's huge.
Wait a minute. It's more now.
Well, no doubt.
I'm looking at these mega churches right now, and it kind of just looks like a real epic party.
Yes, that's right.
Just when you
see
heaps of people out there and the lights and... it's a big building.
The interesting thing is that if you take the church in Nigeria, that's... I think the Anglican Church has 18 million people, which makes it the largest Anglican church in the world. You know, vastly bigger than the American church and the British church that did so much to plant it. And extraordinarily conservative. Islam and Christianity tend to sit on the extreme edge of their traditions. You know, Sharia law in the north, strong hostility to homosexuality among Christians in the south, and so that the Nigerian presence in Anglican circles ensures that they threaten to expel or to reject or to walk away from the church if it should become too tolerant of gay people.
Is there a very sort of evangelical style of preaching going on in these massive churches?
It looks like people are getting healed. They've got the FBOS machines out. It's all full steam ahead.
It's totally, I mean, makes our versions of Pentecostal churches look positively pale compared to the enormous flourishing of drama. I went through various of the images of those churches in some places, and they are just astounding to behold. And I think, you know, that's part of the... There is an African church here in Auckland, and I'm told by those who've been to it that it's the most enormous fun to attend because it's so colourful and dramatic and full of... well, just a blend of colour and ritual.
Life.
And fun.
Mm.
Yeah.
And a little bit of magic. So.
Of course, because you shouldn't imagine that Nigerians have completely turned their back on the traditions when they blend in Christianity to a lot of old traditions within the Nigerian world.
If I was a religious, enthusiast, this would be a bit of a feather in the hat going to one of these mega churches. I feel like it'd be kind of like a bit of a tourist thing, like, yo.
Oh, I think so. Well, even the buildings are just worth a
tourist crazy
trip.
It's epic.
Yeah.
Is it a weekly service for 1 million people?
No, that's apparently a monthly service.
So monthly service.
You have to choose your days of care to see it full. You might just get $100,000 on average Sunday, or perhaps $300,000, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these churches have most extraordinary titles. There's a movement known as Aladura, which was a kind of native religiosity that emerged in Africa and has had quite a big influence both in Nigeria and in South Africa. And that's quite significant, really, in the story, that Nigerian religion has an anti-missionary group who are extremely hostile to the way in which a European religion has been shoved in their throats and have created churches that are kind of anti-missionary in their style. And they're a particularly interesting group, and they tend to blend tradition with Christian practices significantly.
Hmm.
So that when we ever get to fly again, Africa...
Straight to Nigeria.
Yes. For something completely different.
Right on.
Thank you very much, Peter Lynham. Fascinating as always. We'll look forward to speaking with you next week.
I look forward to it too. See you.